Just when you thought today's show was going to be all about Harry Redknapp being back in football, and potentially I was going to touch on the fact that it's Divock Origi's birthday, Theresa May then gives me a very busy day, and who better to go to than the reporter for Newsweek and co-presenter of the Foreign Service podcast, Josh Lowe, joins me on Radio City Talk. Josh, even someone as erudite and on the ball as you must have been pretty surprised in around 11:15 this morning.
I think it's fair to say it came as a shock to everyone who makes their living watching what's going on in Westminster. That's partly because, you know, there was simply no warning given, none of the usual sort of sneaky pre-briefing here and there that you would have expected from some sort of less media-friendly, more media-friendly past prime ministers. But the other thing is that Theresa May has obviously said publicly many times that she didn't want to call an early election, and privately as well, senior Tories have made clear that they don't think it's as good an idea as the polls might suggest. They aren't waiting to call one. So really, this does go against everything that's been said in public and in private for quite some time now.
We'll touch on that word polls in a couple of seconds, because I think it's going to have a huge bearing as to exactly where this is going to go and how we got to this point. Plus, they haven't necessarily been the most reliable form of information over the last number of years, let's just say. But Josh, there was a time when I remember elections were called, right, due to policy issues, due to things needing to be sorted out. And there was one selection of people saying one thing, another selection of people saying another thing, and the best way to sort it out was to call an election. Now, this seems to be an overtly strategic reason to call this election, because the Tories happen to have overt popularity within the British people, therefore giving them a bigger reason to actually go to the polls. Do you remember this being the strategy any time recently? Because it feels quite strange.
Well, elections have always been a mix, or elections in the UK anyway, have always been called for a mix of reasons, some to do with the more hard policy stuff, and some to do with the kind of softer politics of it. And I don't think this is an exception to that. Theresa May does have a commanding poll lead, but she could have called an election for that reason any time since coming into power. What she has realised over the subsequent months is a couple of things. I mean, firstly, she's got the Brexit negotiations coming up, and the stronger a majority she can have behind her in advance of that is going to help in what's going to be some very tough and very controversial negotiations. And the other reason is that she's actually, and she didn't mention this in her speech, but it's nonetheless true, she's had quite a lot of opposition, even from her own benches, to some aspects of her policy agenda which differ from David Cameron's, things like grammar schools, for example, which are quite controversial even in the Tory party, that seem to have led her to think that, well, having my own mandate that is for my manifesto and is probably a bigger majority than the one I currently have could be a good thing. And the last thing to mention, of course, is that there is a ongoing prosecutors looking into allegations of misspending in the 2015 general election by some Tory MPs. If any of those was to come to a prosecution and that person was to be convicted, that would negate their 2015 results. So getting them a new mandate now could be a way of shoring up against that.
Do you think Theresa May doesn't properly feel like she is there on her own steam, if you like? Obviously, she was brought in. It was a very quick vote. They brought her in as leader of the party. David Cameron stepped aside. Theresa May took over the mantle as prime minister. Do you think it could be ego-driven as well, as opposed to policy-driven, like you just said?
Well, I think she'd be justified in thinking that she doesn't have her own mandate, because she doesn't. And there's no evidence so far that the public more broadly particularly mind about that, but it is an easy way for other opponents, particularly on our own side, to stick the boot in and say, no, you can't do that thing just because you want to do it, because nobody has voted for it. So I think, yeah, she is probably pushing for her own personal mandate, her own personal endorsement from voters. And there's a lot of people who were calling for her to do this from the very beginning, because there is a democratic argument for it as well.
You're listening to Radio City Talk. Thank you for joining me. It is full time. I'm joined by Josh Lowe, who is a reporter with Newsweek and Newsweek International and co-presenter of the Foreign Service podcast. You can find it on iTunes and SoundCloud as we speak. So let's talk about the polls, Josh. The polls let us down. when we're talking about Brexit, because it was believed that the people of the UK and beyond would look to stay in the European Union. According to the polls, the same aforementioned polls, Donald Trump wasn't going to be the President of the United States of America. Two of the biggest and most mind-blowing events to happen, at least within my generation. So these polls are saying that the Tories have around a 20-point lead over Labour at the moment. How reliable are these polls, if that's even an appropriate question?
Well, in terms of the lead over Labour, I would suspect there's no reason to think that they're totally wrong. I mean, firstly, you know, the polls did go a bit wrong in Brexit, but they only got it wrong by a point or two. It just happened.
But that point that or two
was
important.
Was a very important one in that context. But in this case, they would need to be wrong by 20 points for the Tories to not be leading Labour. And there's the other point, of course, that usually going into an election, you would expect the opposition to be doing better in the polls than they would actually achieve at the election. So if anything, if these polls are wrong, they are likely to be overstating Labour's support, not understating it. And that indeed was what happened in 2015 as well. The polls were wrong because they thought Labour were more popular than they actually are. But the thing to really watch, other than the gap between the Tories and Labour, is what happens with the Lib Dems. And this is a party who did very badly last time, but that was a kind of artificial result. That was voters giving Nick Clegg a kicking for going into coalition with the Tories. They've now obviously got a new leader. They've got a very appealing to some parts of the country anti-Brexit message. They've got a very weak Labour Party, meaning that they're able to soak up some of that kind of progressive vote. Things are looking very good for the Lib Dems, and that could have all sorts of unexpected consequences. They could steal all sorts of seats back off the Tories in the southwest and in London, where the Tories won seats last time. They could do even more complicated and unexpected things, like stealing away some of the Labour vote in Labour seats, where even if the Lib Dems don't win, they might lead Labour to lose and the Tories to take over. So in terms of what's reliable and what's not reliable in the polls, the thing that is currently likely to be wrong is the level of support for the Lib Dems. Usually smaller parties' support is understated in the polls. Exactly how popular they are is going to have an enormous impact.
They're both going to go at this in a very different way. The Lib Dems are going to go at this in a very different way to Labour. I had the leader of the Lib Dems, Tim Farron, sitting in front of me here a couple of months ago, and we spoke to him specifically about Brexit. You get the feeling that Tim Farron and the Lib Dems are going to build their campaign around Brexit, specifically the fact that they want to stay in the open market. They want to stay in a market that they feel is going to bring over £100 billion into the UK on a yearly basis. Is Brexit going to have as big an impact on this, or is it going to be more down to what Labour are going to be talking about? And we suspect austerity, social issues are going to have a huge part to play in what Labour's campaign is going to be led by.
I think that the Lib Dems will definitely double down on Brexit. And that was kind of the question mark with the Lib Dems, is whether by 2020, which is when the election was supposed to happen, Brexit would still be as relevant. So given that it's been working for them very well so far, they've been soaking up the kind of pro-Remain protest votes against the government, I think they will probably stick with that. Though, of course, they'll have to talk about other things as well. In terms of Labour, I mean, whether they will even have a particularly focused or clear message isn't clear yet. What's been working for them in by-elections over the and in local elections over the last months has been their kind of traditional NHS messaging. They know they still poll quite strongly on the NHS. They'll probably stick with that. In terms of opposition to austerity, they will go in on that. But the problem that they will face is that Brexit is going to be an issue in this election, whether they like it or not.
Will they have to move the goalposts ever so slightly?
Well, they can try, but currently the party doesn't have any real media savvy to speak of, very little media strategy or operation, very little proven track record in shifting the debate in their favour in any way. And they may end up having to talk about Brexit, and that will be a problem for them because they're facing UKIP and the Tories on their right, taking some of their working class voters up in the north. They've got the Lib Dems on their left, taking some of their more metropolitan voters. So I think it's going to be a very tricky election for them.
Let's talk about Scotland very briefly. Nicola Sturgeon saying that she feels that this is mistimed, that Tories are calling this so they can crush all opposition and move the party and therefore the country further to the right. What is this going to mean for Nicola Sturgeon? What is it going to mean for the SNPs? Because they hold a majority up there. In fact, I think there's only one Tory seat currently placed in Scotland at the moment. Is this going to push things closer to Indy Ref 2, or are we much too far away from that just at this point?
Well, for the SNP, I'd be very surprised if there was much change in terms of the general election result up in Scotland. The SNP are still pretty strong up there. The Tories have been doing well in Scotland for them, but whether they're ready to really start winning back seats, especially when Scotland voted to remain, remains to be seen. In terms of IndyRef2, what this does give Nicola Sturgeon is a very good piece of ammunition, because Theresa May's whole argument against having a second independence referendum was, quote-unquote, now is not the time. Nicola Sturgeon can, of course, say, well, if now is not the time for a referendum, why is it not the time for a general election? Since you're having this election, maybe we should have our referendum. Whether she'll get any success with that, and Theresa May's proved pretty stubborn on this before, we don't know, but it could be a powerful bit of ammunition for her.
And let's talk about Northern Ireland as well, because another election in Northern Ireland is... Some part of me thinks it's not what that part of the world needs, but some part of me thinks it is what Northern Ireland needs, having grown up and worked there for the best part of 25, 30 years. Elections are something that happens quite frequently. What is going to happen with the establishment there now, between now and when the polls open on the 8th of June? Do you suspect that any potential full-time resolution to what's happening in Stormont is going to be on hold? There's going to be a more direct rule system? Or is this going to throw everything open again and up in the air, so to speak?
Well, at present, there hasn't been any change in the line from the one that we were given by James Brokenshire, the Northern Ireland minister, which was that May was the deadline for a regional solution to the problem in Stormont at the moment. And he was saying that after, if that didn't happen, there might have to be another assembly election or the reinstatement of direct rule. As it stands, there doesn't seem to be any change in that position. So if there is nothing found by then, it could go either way. On the one hand, it could be a way of reinstating direct rule, but saying, you know, this is a, at least there's a chance for the people from Northern Ireland to have an immediate slight impact on the government at Westminster. On the other hand, it could be a way to say, well, let's have yet another election for the Northern Irish Assembly and have it around the same time. So I think we need to wait and see whether that May deadline is reached before we know what's happening yet.
And very quickly, Josh Lowe, reporter for Newsweek and indeed co-presenter of the Foreign Service podcast on Radio City Talk this afternoon. How do you see the general public, the average person on the street, reacting to this? Will it be with surprise, or are people more across this type of thing now because we've been so politically driven with the likes of Brexit in recent months?
I think there's an element of election fatigue among some people in the UK. You know, people were very exercised and excited by the Brexit referendum, but that really offered them a possibility of change. This is an election that is likely to lead to the same result, at least as far as most ordinary people are concerned, a continuation of Tory government. What will be very interesting will be to see whether there's been a gradual increase in democratic participation in the UK as a result of things like Brexit. Turnout for all sorts of things, by-elections, local elections, the referendum has been very high. It'll be interesting to see if that is sustained for a much more sort of normal general election, which might result in a much less exciting outcome. If it is sustained, then that means it's sort of more indication that we are living in a more energised, more participatory political culture in this country.